When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, Anthony... Check, 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 check. Helps if you turn my microphone on there, pal. Yep. I was going to say, I think the hardest I've ever laughed on the show might have been that. If not, it's when you realize that you lost Competition Wednesday last week and how you had lost it as you sit there in your costume. Why are you wearing the costume? Why are you wearing the Groucho Marx glasses and the top hat? The fedora.
Very impulsive move by me. I don't really have any rhyme or reason for it, just because.
The nose to mine that fell apart is sitting on my desk, and the hair underneath the nose, like the mustache, I guess that's what that's supposed to be. It looks like a mustache straight on. It's awkwardly attached to the nose when you have the piece sitting there in your hand. Mine's falling apart. I just need to throw the nose out because it's not attached to the glasses.
Dang. Did you have any sticky glue?
I guess I could glue it.
Yeah,
I'll figure that out. Although, if you or I hit the costume show this week on the wheel, then we have to wear the rooster sweater. Do we just want to put that as the punishment, no matter what? This week, we're not even going to spin the wheel.
Yeah, I think. Yeah,
I think we just.
I think it's fitting.
I think you just have to wear the rooster sweater. Chris Russell. A.K.A. the Rooster, has donated his Rooster Ugly Christmas sweater for us for Competition Wednesday. And so we'll have to see who wears that tomorrow on the show. As for today on the show, let me pull out my phone real quick because I just saw an email from the old Commanders. And I know they made at least one roster move. Let's see if there's any corresponding. There it goes. So, all right. The Commanders have signed Tyree Jackson, 6'7". Former University of Buffalo quarterback who is a converted tight end to their practice squad, and Kaz Allen, the running back, wide receiver, you remember him, undrafted free agent that they signed last year and almost made the team this year. They really wanted him to make the team, except for he couldn't hold on to the football or make any plays. He is on injured reserve now, so he was on their practice squad. He's not cut or anything. They'll probably bring him back next offseason and see if they can figure that out in year three for Kaz, but he's ultimately going to go on IR for the rest of the season to make room for Tyree Jackson, who they need to bring in as a pass-catching tight end type because Zach Ertz is in the concussion protocol. The other big news today is that the Commanders, and we're going to take your vibe on all of this on a Vibe Check Tuesday here on the Hoffman Show in just a few minutes. because that's what it is. It's a Vibe Check Tuesday, and we're going to take your calls and blah, blah, blah. But we're going to react to this right now. The Commanders' Sunday night game against the Atlanta Falcons has been flexed. It's been flexed not to Saturday like we thought it was going to, Anthony. It is flexed into Sunday night football. They took the game that was there out. They got three other games that they're going to hit on Saturday. And ultimately, the Commanders and Falcons will play with a, I would say, really good, like, a playoff certainty will probably be on the line for both of them. There's a chance that it's just one of them. The Falcons may have to win to stay alive. The Commanders, there's no chance that they'll be playing to stay alive at that point because they have the lead right now. But they could be potentially playing to clinch depending on what happens in other games. And there's a chance that they clinch by knocking the Falcons out if the Falcons win this week and the Commanders lose this week. So I think that's how that goes. The Falcons could be eliminated this week if they lose because they would be two back with two to play and need tiebreakers that aren't available to them. So a lot of moving parts still at this point. There is a way that the Commanders can clinch this weekend. And of course, they have to either win or tie versus Philadelphia. But they're in really good shape. And that is kind of the status quo of things. How do you feel about this Commanders-Falcons game being flexed to Sunday Night Football? Because I know how I feel about it.
I mean, it's exciting. The storylines, you got Kirk coming back to FedEx. You have Jaden.
Excuse you.
And the Commanders.
Northwest Stadium.
Would you say? My bad. I think it's a juicy matchup in general. Raheem Morris, he also spent time here in Washington. So
DQ versus Atlanta? That's Quinn's first matchup against the team that he used to be the head coach for.
Oh, yeah, that too.
So you got all kinds of juiciness. Personally, I'm annoyed because Anthony, notoriously,
I already know.
I don't stay up late. I don't stay up late. And so because of that, and knowing the fact that I will be covering this game, I would rather do it. If I'm gonna have to stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning, I'd rather it also be Saturday night versus Sunday night. So if you're going to make us the night game, can you at least do me a solid, NFL, make it Saturday? But all jokes aside, it's not about me. And this is a really exciting thing, I think, for the city. It's a really exciting thing for Commanders fans. Like, they have not been flexed. I will out myself a little bit here. I couldn't remember, and I was texting Commanders PR, and I was like, is this the first time that they've ever been flexed into Sunday night? Because the game flexing hasn't been around that long. It's only been around for like 12 seasons. And the Commanders largely have been terrible in the last 12 seasons. They haven't had a lot of meaningful games in later in the season. And like, it used to be you could only flex late in the season. Now you can flex like, I think it's like week 6 or 7 on. So there's a lot more flexing that happens. But there just hasn't been a lot of good Commanders late games or late season games, period. And apparently back in 2022, the Commanders did actually, with a Taylor Heinicke game somewhere late in the season versus the New York Giants, who were good that year. That's the year that they wound up being Minnesota in the playoffs, if I'm remembering correctly. They had a game flexed. So it has happened a couple of times. This is the first time since 2022 that the Commanders have had a game flexed. But it is a fairly rare occurrence, obviously, in their history. And I think it's really exciting, the fact that that could be a Sunday night clinching. You know, all the other, like, the scenarios will be very, very clear because it's not like there's, hey, the scoreboard watching here, whatever there. All the Week 17 games will have been played. And then Washington and Atlanta get, I guess there is a Monday nighter, I think. Maybe not that week, though. Let me double check that schedule real quick because I know they don't do a Monday nighter in Week 18, but Week 17, I'm not sure they want anybody going into the final week of the season on short rest. No, there is. It's Lions 49ers. So both those teams, unless the Niners, I guess, win technically, they could still be a part of this mess. But realistically, you're looking at the games that matter of consequence being done. And then you have a clear path. So you will have And in fact, you'll know some of those on Saturday because, like, the Cardinals-Rams matchup is big in that. Where are they? The Seahawks that week face. Where are the Seahawks? They don't have a bye. Got to be on this list somewhere. There we go. Oh, they've got the Bears on Thursday that week. So you will. That's why I didn't scroll up far enough. So those are the key teams to watch. And then Falcons Commanders wind up on a Sunday night, and you'll know exactly what the situation is. There's a chance that you can clinch. There's also a chance that you might have to wait until week 18, but there's a really good chance that, especially because the Seahawks have the biggest game left on the schedule, non-Commanders for the Commanders, is probably this weekend. It's probably the Seahawks and the Vikings, because if Minnesota handles business and the Seahawks are now in another hole, they're going to have to win out to even have a chance to tie the Commanders, assuming that the Commanders beat Atlanta and Dallas in their final two, which are not a given by any stretch of the imagination. But Washington's probably going to have to do that anyway. If they beat Philly, then, like, it's a totally different ballgame. But they're probably going to have to win at least one of the remaining three, if not two. And the Seahawks are the team, I think, to watch. And they have a tough schedule because they have Minnesota this weekend. So that's kind of I know that was very convoluted, Anthony, but that's the state of play.
No, I mean, I think you flushed out, you know, the whole situation. I mean, and I think for us personally, we just got to try to take, you know, one game at a time. Like, we are in full control of our destiny. And yes, the game against Philly is going to be tough, but, you know, we'll also have two more opportunities after that to. Do you think, I guess, two games for sure gets us in?
Two games for sure mathematically gets you in.
Yeah.
Because they hold that if they win two of the last three and the next team behind them is Seattle, Seattle, I guess if they beat Philly and they beat Dallas and they lose to Atlanta, I guess technically Atlanta can win out and then that becomes complicated. I don't know if it's a head-to-head tiebreaker first. If it is and you've lost to Atlanta, like, that could be bad, but that involves Atlanta winning out and including a win over you. You beat Atlanta, Atlanta's toast because you have a two-game lead plus a head-to-head, and they can't catch you in conference tiebreaker and. So that's thing one. Thing two, if you win, or Seattle would have to win out, and then is if you win two, you're tied on record, but Washington would have the better in-conference record, and thus they would get in. So you win two, you're automatically in. You win three, you're obviously automatically in. You win one, you need help. Also, by the way, if you win two, it's your first 11-win season since the 1990s, like the early 1990s. So that would be cool.
Need it, man. We need it.
Need it. Okay, 301-230-0980 is the phone number. 301-230-0980. That is where you call us on a Vibe Check Tuesday. How do you feel about the Commanders' win over the Saints? And if you have any thoughts on the game for Sunday night being flexed next week, Commanders, Falcons, Sunday Night Football, you can let us know now. It's a Vibe Check Tuesday, and we're taking your calls next.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. And we're taking your calls because it's a Vibe Check Tuesday. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. Commanders, Saints, they survive. They get the win. No one seems to be particularly happy. Commanders also have Sunday Night Football flexed. On week 17, or flex into Sunday Night Football, their matchup against the Falcons. We're taking your thoughts on all of it, starting with Saeed. Saeed, thanks for calling. You're on the Hoffman Show.
Hey, how's it going, bro?
I'm good, Saeed. How are you, bro?
I'm doing good. So in terms of the Saints game, I'm feeling okay about it. My only concern is our remaining tight ends with Ertz down don't seem to excel with catching the ball on our team. And I'm also concerned that good defenses will find a way to box in McLaurin and force other guys to have separation. And I don't see any of our other wide receivers creating any separation. So I'm concerned about that from the weapon standpoint, not so much as concerned with the defense stopping the run. I'm less concerned about that. But in terms of Atlanta, I think the Giants go to Atlanta and somehow put the nail in the coffin to the Kirk Cousins story. And I think the Sunday night flex is going to be Michael Penix and his first game in Washington.
So the only way that that is Michael Penix's first game is if Atlanta's already been eliminated. There's 0% chance that they are putting him into a meaningful game. Because if he was, like, if it was close the way Kirk is playing right now, they would have gone to him. Because Kirk's not playing very well. But the thing is, like, they when asked about it, they were like, yeah, he's not ready. Which is hilarious because the whole point of drafting Michael Penix was he's like 25 years old and was supposed to be already ready, which is why it made no sense that a team that had just signed a veteran quarterback was the one drafting him. But take without relitigating that whole thing again, I think the only way you see Michael Penix against the Commanders on Sunday Night Football making his debut is if Kirk is either injured or the Falcons have already been eliminated and they're just like, we'll figure out the Kirk thing this offseason. We're going to get Penix some experience. As for your other thoughts, and thanks, Saeed, as always, for the call. The tight end thing is definitely worrying. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, but like Ben Sinnott is, he is definitively not where they need him to be in order to step into Zach Ertz's shoes. Those shoes are too big for him. He doesn't have the ability to separate. I don't think that they trust him on some of the stuff that they trust Zach on. I think they put Bates in some of those situations and key spots. And I think that's probably the correct call at this point. Not because I'm secretly trying to tell you that John Bates is an awesome tight end. He's just reliable. Like, you know what he can and can't do. Send it to wild card. You're like, you should be able to do this, but you don't always. And if you don't do it right, then we're in some trouble. So could Tyree Jackson, who they signed to the practice squad today, wind up and playing this week? Maybe. Colson Yankoff has been on IR. Could they pull him back onto the roster? Maybe. That is something worth watching. But Yankoff's an undrafted free agent who is a rookie and hasn't been playing all year. So, or hasn't been playing in weeks and weeks and weeks. So I don't know that that is exactly, if he's even healthy. I think he is. I think Kime said he's healthy on his show, on the podcast, and John would know. But yeah, that's kind of the situation there. I do think De'Ami Brown had a really good game. I do think that some of the stuff they asked Luke McCaffrey to do, you can ask KJ Osborne to do, and he will be an upgrade as long as he knows the assignment. Luke definitely missed some assignments in this game, and you're like, oh yeah, he's still a rookie figuring this thing out. That's maybe why he hasn't played as much, even though I think there's been some clamoring, including from me at times, to get him on the field more. But the one thing that I do take out as a huge positive from the New Orleans game that was a huge problem in the Philly game the first time around relative to Terry is that was by far the most they moved him around this season. Terry played 60 snaps out wide. There were 41 on the left and 19 on the right. So I've told you, it doesn't have to be a 50-50 split, but like a 60-30 type of split. That's even aggressive. Maybe 60-40, 70-30. Like even if it's 80-20, where it's just not predictable, like that's good. And they got there. They got it to where it's like two-thirds of the snaps, he was lined up on the right side. When he's lined up wide, and it was also pretty even. He's lined up 10 snaps in the slot, and it was like, I think six on the left, four on the right. So he moved around slot versus outside. He moved around left versus right. Like, they moved him around, and they got good stuff off of that. And some of their shot plays are because they get Terry matched up on the right guy at the right time. And so the way that Philly was able to lock in and bracket Terry at all times last time out, I don't think that's going to be on the table because I think Cliff has, I don't want to say he's finally learned his lesson, but like he's learned that in this offense with this group of receivers, he can't just line Terry up to the left like he did early in his coaching career with guys like DeAndre Hopkins, because maybe he had a Larry Fitzgerald inside, or he had a younger, more prime Zach Ertz that was taking attention. He had multiple guys. He doesn't have that here. And so he's got to make sure that his number one guy, Terry, is getting moved around to places where he can get good matchups and get the football. Let's go to Vaughn. Vaughn, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being on the Hoffman Show. I want to try to make it real quick, because I know you got calls coming in. And my heat check is that I'm just this is still a little wary, because we didn't came off of two buys and not really focused. You know, I'm thinking with a long second buy, we should have been a little bit more focused, and we had a lot of penalties, and I'm skeptical about that scenario with the Redskins and the Commanders, because that's been a trend with the Redskins coming off a bye. So I'm a little worried about that. And one other question I want to ask y'all, and just to see, you know, where y'all at with this. I think Robinson runs too high. And dealing with these type of defenses and with Philly defense, he's not as shifty with the type of O-line that we got. You know, when you have that, when you had Emmett and you had Riggo, them old lines was very good. So they can run in between the gaps. But when you have a Jaquan and like a Barry Sanders with a subpar old line like he had with the Giants and when Barry had with the Detroit, they were shifty backs. They can make the line look good. And I look at Robinson. Not when you're going up against a defense like Philly, it's not shifty enough. Sometimes you got to make, you know, players miss to be effective. And I'm just a little skeptical about his running style now, this late in the season. And I'm seeing his footwork is not really, you know what I mean, not very shifty as far as a running back concern. And I just don't see us beating Philly because, you know, with the penalties with New Orleans and...
Yeah, I hear you, Vaughn. All right, I do got to run because we're up against the clock. I'll respond to you real quick, but I appreciate your call. First thing to work in reverse. I think that Brian Robinson played remarkably well against the Saints, considering the O-line was an absolute disaster in the running game. He was running into messy looks all game. And yes, would Barry Sanders have been better in his prime? Yes, Barry Sanders is the best running back any of us have ever seen. He is the GOAT in my book in terms of just pure ability and production. You take prime Barry Sanders in any era of the NFL, put him behind any offensive line, and he's still going to the Hall of Fame. He was that good. Brian Robinson is not that good. But I do think Brian Robinson is pretty freaking good. And I think his ability to fall forward, his vision, like he can make the most of stuff at times. He doesn't necessarily do it in a shifty, make and miss kind of way. He just hits the right angle. And sometimes things that should be -2 become +2. But that hidden yardage, that 4 yards right there matters a lot. Because the difference between second and 12 versus 2nd and 8, which means if you gain 5 yards on second down, no matter how you get it, it's now 3rd and 3 versus 3rd and 8. So that becomes a really big deal, or 3rd and 7. Like, that's a really big deal, the consistency with which he just gets the most. And I do think he has some big playabilities we saw against Tennessee if you can get stuff blocked up correctly. Does that mean you can't upgrade over him? That, like, an Ashton Jeanty out of Boise State, who I know Dame Brugler from The Athletic mocked to them in his first mock draft of, it's not really draft season, but first mock draft of this round, like, okay, Ashton Jeanty might be a really, really special talent. And if that's the case and they want to go that direction, they think he's by far the best player on their board, run this tape back in May or April, but I don't hate that idea. But I think B-Rob's really good. And I also don't think that we should confuse running high versus being tall. B-Rob's pretty tall for a running back, so I don't think that he's got a leverage issue either. On the penalties and stuff, yeah, I typically push back on the not focus, not this. I don't know what it was, whether it's focused, you know, lack of attention during the week, just not being sharp. I don't know what it was, but they were super not locked in on the details in a way that they haven't been in almost any other game this year. Ironically, outside the Dallas game, which is their second biggest rest game of the year, coming off the Thursday night game against Philly the first time around, kind of the mini bye, if you will. So I don't know whether they installed more stuff and they didn't practice as much of the old stuff and they weren't as sharp, or they don't have as many reps with the new things. Whatever it was, they have got to get their details down from getting lined up correctly. And that's Olamide Zaccheaus not leaving early on the play that gets called back for a TD. It's Luke McCaffrey narrowing down his split so he has a chance of making the block that you need to on that third and one at the goal line. Whether it's any of the penalties, like, just they weren't sharp. And you can't win like that against the best teams in the league. And I would say it happens to every team every year. The fact that it's only happened two times in 14 games for the Commanders overall is pretty good. But I would like to have some higher confidence that that is not going to happen again. And I would love to know why it is happening off extended rest, because that's something they need to obviously fix next year. But unless they make the Super Bowl, they're probably not going to have a bye for the rest of this season. When we get back, more of your calls at 301-230-0980. We got our guy Gary in Upper Marlboro on hold, and then we got a whole bunch of lines open for you on the Hoffman Show. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980, taking your calls on this Five Check Tuesday at 301-230-0980. Let's go to our guy Gary in Upper Marlboro. Gary, thanks for holding. Appreciate you. You are back on the Hoffman Show.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and happy holidays to you. Here's the problem that I have with the Saints game. In a vacuum, if it was out on by itself, I would say, okay, it was just a bad performance. They probably weren't looking, you know, looking around this team to get to Philadelphia, blah, 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 blah. But the concern that I have is this team is simply not playing their best football. Take that Tennessee game away, where Tennessee probably played one of the worst games I've ever seen a team play, okay? You take that game away, and you look at all of the games going back to the Chicago game, they haven't played well. They could easily be on a losing streak right now. And that's the concern that I have, is this is a New Orleans team that was ready to get beat down. They had XFL-level quarterbacks, and somehow, in some way, they were playing. And I know that there were a lot of bad calls and so forth, but they didn't come and put this team away in the second half. They only scored 6 points in the second half. So I don't know if this is a byproduct of the bye or whatever, but it seems like this is a consistent level of play where they're not playing their best football, except for that Tennessee game. Having said that, I think they have a shot to beat Philadelphia, because only because of the odds of Philadelphia having to win. They're on a 10-game winning streak, okay? And if in order for them to go to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl, I think it's 16 straight games. The odds say that's not going to happen. So, and Washington had some moments against Philadelphia, and I think that, you know, the rivalry, they have a shot against Philadelphia. Now, would I bet on it? No. But I wouldn't be surprised at home that they find a way to beat Philadelphia. And if that happens, then everything that I just said about the way they played in these last six or seven games goes out the window, because they beat the best team in football, and then I think they have something going forward. But I'm just concerned with this New Orleans game, because their pattern in the last half of the season is they haven't played well, and they could easily be on a losing streak, save for that Tennessee game.
So, Gary, this is why this game confuses the mess out of me, because there are huge parts of me that 100% agree with you. I could also present an argument that, one, the Tennessee game, I mean, this is the easiest counter. It's like, yeah, but the Tennessee game does exist. And I know Tennessee was bad, but, like, they beat them sideways. Like, they took advantage maximally of a bad Tennessee team and took them behind the woodshed and did their business. So that is part one. Part two is, I think there is an easy alternate narrative for this game, which is the Commanders, like, actually didn't down in, down out play that badly in this game. And I know it feels really bad because of how the score line went, but they didn't go three and out in the entire game. The only three play sequence that they had was the end of the first half. The half ended. It ended when they had a first down. So it wasn't like they went three and out. So 0 3 and outs offensively, despite the fact that their offensive line did not play very well. They found ways to overcome that. Jaden made a bunch of plays. You had other guys that made plays. And then defensively, they forced a ton of three and outs. They would have had two or three more if it wasn't for some penalties. I mean, the BSJ penalty, which is ridiculous on Benjamin, like, not a bad call, ridiculous. Like, what is he doing? Get your hands out of the dude's face. Like, that's a three and out that turned into like a 10 play drive. And so all in all, like, down in, down out, I think they actually played pretty well this game. And on some level, you have to give them credit for figuring out a way to win, even though there was a bunch of stuff that kept happening that was trying to undermine them. And at times, they were undermining themselves. But I also, like, it doesn't feel good. And the margins are really close. And I do agree that it doesn't feel like they're playing their best football, which is why, like, I really struggle on kind of what to make of this game. But are any of those counterpoints convincing at all to you?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the only thing I would say is the defense playing well, they were playing against XFL-level quarterbacks, okay? And the fact that the offensive line didn't play well was that, I mean, I don't know that the Saints have a murderer's row on the defensive line. So the question is, why were they playing so poorly? I mean, that's our team.
I mean, but I would say a lot of it had to do with Biadasz being out. Like, they were discombobulated all day. And, like, little things that I didn't even notice till I watched the tape back that, and Logan mentioned is like, hey, does this feel off to you? Like, the timing of everything was off. Like, Dieter would snap the ball and, like, start going, and everyone else was just a half beat late. And that's partly, oh, well, okay, you should be able to do that if there you have a backup center. Yeah, but he got no reps all week. Like, he was a surprise Sunday start when Biadasz got sick. It wasn't like he was injured and got reps. And, look, you have to be able to overcome those things, and they did just enough. But I don't think Sam Cosmi is going to all of a sudden be a bad football player. He was really bad on Sunday. And so, like, on that level, it doesn't really concern me because I don't think the best player arguably on the entire team is going to have multiple bad games in a row.
I agree with you on the Biadasz thing. That's not something that I took into account. The center can do that. But, yeah, but again, I think they have a chance against Philly for the reason that I stated.
Yeah, I agree.
And, appreciate the call.
Yeah, no, appreciate you calling always, Gary. Good chat as usual. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Getting your feelings going into these final three games on a Vibe Check Tuesday. Let's go to Kenny in Charlotte. Kenny, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. You are on the Hoffman Show on a Vibe Check Tuesday.
Always a pleasure, Craig. How's
yes,
it going?
Sir. Yes, sir. Doing well. Hope you are as well.
Yeah, man. I would say I'm kind of like nervous, anxious, simply because we're in a good space that we haven't been in what feels like forever, man. And I just don't want them to blow it. You know what I'm saying? With these last three games, it's unfamiliar territory for me. You know, we've in the past backed into playoff berths, and this one just feels different. It feels like we're supposed to be here, and it seems like, you know, it's a little too soon, you know, but I'm happy at the same time, which leads to a question that I had for you last week is while we are doing good and most likely we'll end up in the playoffs, are there any positions that you can foresee the management saying, you know what, we're good here, when maybe we're really not, just because we made the playoffs and we have a good record? Are there any positions that they could overlook and say, we want to keep it good, we want to keep these players, and then not move forward to somebody better for the long term? I hope I articulated it.
Yeah, no, I think you articulated it great. And I think you articulated it like someone who's lived through a lot of Washington football nonsense in front offices over the last one, two, or three decades, depending on how fast or how long you want to go back, where you've had plenty of guys in those positions convince themselves that they're okay. And the reason I would say, like, are there positions that need upgrading? Yes. Are they going to upgrade all of them? Probably not, just because free agency and draft, like, you only have so many resources. But do I think any of those will happen in this particular case with this front office because they are lying to themselves? No, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you see that on tape often where they understand who they are. And there are guys that they try to protect where, like, they know Andrew Wiley one-on-one 15 times a game is not a good formula. Like, Andrew Wiley has some strengths that they've really leaned into this year. His movement in the run game and his ability to get on the perimeter. Like, their best runs have been these guard tackle pull plays where Andrew Wiley's out in front and he's been great at it. But leaving him one-on-one on the edge, like Eric Bieniemy did 25 times a game last year with no chip help, is a nightmare. And so because they know that, and they know what happens if all of a sudden that guy doesn't have to chip, could they go upgrade at right tackle? Absolutely. Could they also be like, we're making this work and we like what he does in the run game. Let's just stick with it and invest our resources somewhere else. I think that's also a possibility. So I guess, like, specifically to answer your question, no, because I think they know who they are. They're realistic about it, and they've shown that all year. And I think that they also then will be able to act upon that in the offseason. But that doesn't mean every single space that fans, and even, you know, me or Logan or anybody else wants to see them upgrade is necessarily going to be upgraded, because I think that there's some stuff where they're going to have to make hard choices, and they'll just plan around some of the weaknesses again next year, because that's the NFL.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have to really be thankful for where we are this year. So I don't mean to push back against some of the callers that, you know, seem to have these expectations like we should have done this or should have done that. But, you know, and I guess they can. But for real, man, I'm grateful. I'm like, man, I didn't see this coming. I didn't see us 9-5 and in this position this soon. So, you know, I just don't want us to get overly comfortable with the positions and overlook them next year.
No, I totally get it, Kenny. And don't let anybody tell you how to feel. You feel whatever feelings you want to feel. Kenny, appreciate the call as always. Thank you. It's a Vibe Check Tuesday here on the Hoffman Show. We got at least three more. We got a couple of phone lines open. We're going to squeeze all these calls in before the end of the hour next. And then Mitch Tischler joins us coming up at 5 p.m. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Mitch Tischler on a Tischler Tuesday coming up at 5 p.m. Of course, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast with J.P. Finley. He'll join us at 5. Jaden Daniels, Take Command, Tape Tuesday at 5:30. Our NFL tiers at 6. That's going to get interesting. So, loaded show still to come here on the Team 980. Breaking baseball news, just real quick, because this literally just came across, as hot stove stuff is heating up in Major League Baseball. The Cubs are trading Cody Bellinger to the Yankees. So there you go. Baseball fans, baseball! Cody Bellinger to the Yankees from the Cubs. That according to Jeff Passan at ESPN. Back to the football. Vibe Check Tuesday, 301-230-0980. How are you feeling about the Commanders off their win over New Orleans, headed into Philly and this final three-game stretch of the season? Let's go to Reggie. Reggie, thanks for holding. You are on the Hoffman Show.
What's going on, Craig? Love the show as always.
Appreciate it, bro.
I don't understand, man, how people are, like, I don't say down, but I, you know, listening all week. Craig, I get it. You know what I mean? We was up 14-0. I think, you know, I think that drive before half, I think if we maybe scored one more, got 17, if we missed field goal. You know, I get it. It came down to, you know, a nail biter, which you shouldn't have. But Craig, it's the NFL. And more importantly, I think we, and you probably can agree with this, we're 2 years ahead of schedule. Like, we just had a complete freaking roster overhaul. So for me, man, I'm excited about where we are. There's no way. I don't care what I'm talking about your diehard, which I am, like, the glass is always full, that I expected for us to be 9-5 at this point. So with us being 9-5, I'm really looking at this Eagles game. This is the, according to, like, pretty much all of the rankings, the best team in the NFL. They won, what, 11 straight. I'm looking to see really just, you know, mano a mano, coaching on coaching. How do we really stack up against the Eagles? The first game, again, we if you think about it, think about the first game. The Eagles played Dallas, but that was without Dak, and they was crushing them where they hurt. I don't think they played in the fourth quarter. So I'm not saying that was kind of a bye, but that wasn't a physical game like we played against Pittsburgh that came down to the fourth quarter. So we're in a physical battle against Pittsburgh. They, again, in more of a, you know, kind of a not relaxed because it's an NFL game, but they had a rather easier game against Dallas than we played them on a short week. So I want to see really, okay, you know, equal rest. You know, as far as injuries are concerned, I'm going to be really curious as far as some of the injuries that we had, especially with the offensive line, because they, you know, them two boys in the middle, but Philly is putting a lot of pressure, you know, on opposing offensive line. So as long as we can come in relatively healthy, I want to see how we really stack up with the Eagles. Because remember, Craig, you know, what was that, fourth quarter? It was 13-12.
No, it was. It was. And to add on to what you're saying, Reggie, and I appreciate your perspective on this because, like, you have to both zoom in and zoom out at the same time, which sounds impossible. But, like, within the context of the Saints game, it's really frustrating because they should have put that game away on a bunch of different plays because they're just the better team. But should they be the better team at this point with where they are in the rebuild and how bad the roster was last year and how much turnover? You're absolutely right on a bigger picture standpoint. And the other thing I'll add, too, is there is probably no team that I'd least like to face schematically on a short week with a rookie quarterback than the Philadelphia Eagles for an offense. So defensively, what they present, and Vic Fangio's the guy that invented the defense, he does stuff that nobody else does, and they do it better than all the other teams that do versions of it. And so that, like, zone match, is it man, is it zone, how do I progress through this, to try to game plan for and teach a young player that, even one as smart and dedicated as Jaden Daniels, on 4 days rest, 3 days rest, or 3 days of prep time, like, that's nasty. That is really tough. And so I'm very, very, yeah, on the road, yeah, too. I'm very, although, you know, let's be real. Philadelphia ain't that much farther from Ashburn than FedEx or than Northwest Stadium, but that's, we can talk about that a different day. Maybe tomorrow, as we'll have more updates on the RFK bill. Point is, that was a tough one. That was a really tough one schedule-wise. Every team has them. They performed admirably for 3.5 quarters, and then things went sideways. But I'm very much looking forward to Sunday as well. Reggie, thanks for the call. As always, happy holidays. Let's go to Keith. Keith, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you? Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome to the show, Keith. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I wanted to mention a couple of things, and then I'll talk about the receiver core, and I'll keep it short. But I'm concerned about an ongoing trend that we have of playing really well in the first half and then nothing offensively in the second half. Like, that's something that continuously happens, and I'm sort of worried about. Is that game planning, or what is that? Or are we just taking our foot off the gas? And then secondly, with Jaden, as much as he's played well, as I watch it, and you tell me if this is me, but literally, every time he decides to start running, he stops looking downfield, because there are many, many times when he could just take the dump off, or the short, drop it off to a running back or somebody in the flat, and he doesn't do it, and he either gets hit or he gets no gain and runs out of bounds. So those are the two trends. And then the last part of it is, as we're talking about our receivers, like, I wonder why we don't talk about Jamison Crowder enough. I mean, I really like Jamison. I remember from when he was here with us the first time, and he was one of my favorite players. He's great in the slot. He's shifty, which is one of the issues we don't have with a lot of the other receivers. But it doesn't seem like anybody is considering him as an option to solve some of our issues with the receivers. And I will stop and let you talk.
Keith, appreciate the call. And great questions, great points. Let me work in reverse, and let me keep you on the phone just so if I forget the first thing you talk about. Crowder is, look, I covered Jamison when I was on the beat. Jamison's one of my favorite guys. It's kind of funny because when I walk in the locker room now, I don't know a lot of those guys, but Jamison and I kind of give each other a look like, hey, I actually do know you. So I have a soft spot for Jamison on a personal level. And as a player, I think he is useful. He still is shifty, but his lack of size at times shows up. He's not as reliable as a blocker in the run game. Like, he fights hard. He's just not that good at it. And so if he's on the field, is that a giveaway slash you're just giving away a blocker if you do decide to run it, versus guys like Diami or OZ, who are a little tougher in that realm. And he doesn't have, like, for as quick as he is in short areas, he doesn't have great vertical speed. So there's some limitations in his game that way. And at some point, as much as I like him and think that in certain situations he's really helpful, like, he's been around the league a little bit. He's bounced around. He was signed here on the practice squad. Other teams could have signed him. He was on IR for most of the year, but last year, like, he was available if teams wanted him for portions of the season. So I just think, like, we have to be realistic about who he is, which is probably like a fourth receiver, and they're using him that way. And I think they can use him more against, like, man-to-man coverage, and they did some of that on Sunday, and I think they'll continue to do that the rest of the season. So that's the Jamison Crowder part of it. What was the other thing that you mentioned before that?
About the disturbing trend of not
first half, second half,
offensively in the second half.
Yeah, so it definitely has been a trend, and they've gotten up big in some first halves, and things have not gone as well. But it also is hard, because here's the second half on Sunday. I have my offensive notes in front of me. So the first play, or the first drive of the second half, ends at the 1 yard line with that play where Luke McCaffrey doesn't do what he needs to do, and they don't get in, and they kick a 23-yard field goal, which makes me want to pull my hair out. The second drive of that half ends on a field goal There was a sack on that drive, and that kind of undid it. And Jaden just had a bad play. That happens. There's some other stuff in that drive where there's some near misses. The third drive of that half, it ends on that was probably their worst drive of the game. But all in all, you have bad drives. Okay, that's one out of three that I would say is a bad drive. And the final drive of the game it's a 4-plus minute drive that's like over 10 plays that ends on a missed field goal that they should have gotten late. And they also have a play that gets them inside the 10-yard line that's called back on a correct but kind of ticky-tack penalty on Nick Allegretti. So, and by the way, on both of those last two drives, the one that I said is the worst drive of the game, and the last drive that ends in a field goal, those two drives have the three missed opportunities from Jaden Daniels to Terry McLaurin, which all could have been 50-plus yard touchdowns. So, like, sometimes it's not game plan. And I think it's a great question because it allows us to illustrate that it's not some game plan change. Like, Cliff clearly had some haymakers that he saved in his back pocket, and he called him at the end, and you just didn't hit him. So it's execution. It's not committing penalties. It's hitting the big-time throws. It's stuff like that. And sometimes you hit them in the first half, you don't in the second. I don't know if there's any real magic to that or just kind of how it's gone. But it definitely is an execution thing to me, not a game plan thing, because those opportunities existed and they just didn't take advantage of them.
Got it.
There you go.
The other question was about Jaden taking those dump downs instead.
Yeah, I think that's the next step for him. Like, he's a young player, and I think you have to let him figure some of this stuff out on his own, because you also don't get the 3rd-and-16 conversion for a first down if you don't let him scramble around some. And so he's going to make some plays, and other times you're like, man, just take the easy one, take the check down. And I think just as Lamar did, as Josh Allen did, as some of these great mobile quarterbacks are at the top of the NFL, they figured it out as they went, and I think Jaden is smart enough that he will as well. But it's definitely an ongoing process, and your eyes are not deceiving you that the optimal situation would be for him to check it down a little more often. Keith, great call, especially for a first one. Really appreciate it, and thanks as always for listening. When we get back, Mitch Tischler joins us. It's a Tischler Tuesday here on the Hoffman Show.